welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we will be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @ypsport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
So, let's start this week in League Two and turn our attention to Bradford City, who were able to share the points after coming back from being 1-0 down to claim a 1-1 draw with Grimsby. The Bantams seem to struggle with creating any clear-cut chances, even after Mark Hughes changed up the team formation at half-time. However, substitute Alex Gilead was able to drill a shot past the Grimsby keeper to avoid defeat. How do you think Mark Hughes will feel following that game, and how could his team improve ahead of their clash with Harrogate Town?
Well, I think he'd be relieved more than anything. It's been a unconvincing start from Bradford this season. I mean, in fairness to them, they were slow starters last season. There was a bit more mitigation then with them pretty much ripping things up and started again. With the way they went into this season, I think we were hopeful that they'd hit the ground running a bit quicker. Maybe the formation change to three at the back has been a big factor. But yeah, they've just not quite hit their straps yet. And all of last season, really, there was a feeling that they were just not quite, just sort of one step away from where they needed to be so often. And you know, that certainly came across in the Grimsby game, where, you know, as you've already alluded to, they were fortunate really to take a point. I mean, you know, there were positives. You know, the full debut for Bobby Poynton, you know, a really big one in that respect, and hopefully he can be a big part of things going forward. It's always nice to see a local lad coming through and justifying his selection. So hopefully he can bring a bit of energy and vigour to that team. But yeah, I think they do need to get their head around their tactics going forward. If this back three is worth persevering with, you know, the balance of the midfields, we've seen, you know, we saw Richie, sorry, it was Kevin McDonald we saw substituted at the weekend, wasn't it? Richie Smallwood's had times out of the side, and whether those two are a partnership they can go with going forward or not, that's something else that needs to be decided in midfield. But it's not time for panic. That's for certain. As I say, they did recover from a slow start last season, but They just need to find that right blend, and of course they're coming up against Harrogate Town at the weekend, who are a club they've had their difficulties against in the past. So they'll need to be on their game to make the most of that fixture.
Yeah, definitely. And now we turn our attention to Doncaster Rovers, who suffered a late and frustrating 1-0 defeat at the hands of Wrexham. This left Donny rooted at the foot of the table. Their next game sees them pay a visit to Forest Green Rovers. What do Doncaster Rovers have to do so that they can stop this rapid slide in results? Because, I mean, if they don't stop it now, they could easily find themselves seeing the league just run away with it, Stuart.
Yeah, and obviously it builds on a pattern we've talked about very often on this podcast of the last couple of years of really, you know, the momentum really going the wrong way for Doncaster. Again, I think we were hopeful that with the change of manager and with the, you know, quite a drastic overhaul of the squad, that things would start a bit more positively this season. It seems that they played reasonably well against Wrexham. Just a couple of sloppy goals have cost them. And yeah, again, it feels like they sort of just need to get their head around exactly how they're going to do things. It seems like Richard Woods had a bit of a difficult start. He's obviously been asked to do things at Doncaster that he wasn't being asked to do very often at Rotherham. Often playing in a back four, being asked to play the ball out a bit more, and something which was a theme of his time at Rotherham, but can't be helping. He's been chopped in and out of the team, and that doesn't help the cohesion at the moment. So yeah, again, I think they just need to have a bit of a think about where they're going. Again, not to over panic, but this does need addressing quickly, because psychologically there's a danger that the club as a whole, even though a lot of the players weren't there last season, the club as a whole can get in this mindset of here we go again, and they dig themselves into a hole that's difficult to get out of. But I mean, Mo Farah's goal was a big tick in the box. We talked about Bobby Poynton. Mo Farah's come on loan at Doncaster as another young player, and to see him score, that'll do him a lot of good. Louis Marsh came on deadline day. Hopefully he can get settled in quite quickly. But yeah, they've got to quickly address this slide, because unlucky defeats or not, defeats piling up are really going to do them some damage if they're not careful.
Yeah, exactly. Because like you said, they could easily run the risk of, as a club, losing that sort of self-belief, which is incredibly difficult for the manager and the players themselves to shake. So the last thing they will want is to come back from the international break or after this period and find themselves thinking, how are we going to do this?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, not that anyone at Doncaster would be finding it funny right now, but sometimes at football clubs you can change all the on-field personnel, you can change the coaching staff, but a psychology can still remain, particularly if you're in a losing streak. And as I say, it's been a couple of years of pretty steady decline at Doncaster Rovers. And I think sometimes this isn't to criticise anyone, but it can come as much from the stands, when people who have been ground down by failure after failure just get in that mindset of, oh no, here we go again, and it can create an apprehension on the terraces, which is, I say, it's totally understandable. It's really hard to fight against, but it can become, quite infectious if you're not careful. And I say that backdrop of the last couple of seasons makes this start, more concerning for me. The points that they're, the gap that they're giving away can easily be made up if you've got the belief you can do it. But my worry is that, as I say, that self-belief is just ebbing away. And we were saying last season, Leon and I, that we were worried that Doncaster might get themselves into this position. But in all honesty, when they made the changes they did in the summer, I really didn't see it coming. And I saw Doncaster Rovers knock Hull City out of the League Cup, play really well that night, and you thought, hopefully they're going to be turning a corner here. But it just seems as though that mental barrier, when it comes to league football particularly, it's just a really difficult one for them to get over right now.
And now we turn our attention to Harrogate Town, who fell to their third straight defeat when they suffered a late and agonising 1-0 defeat away at Gillingham. With 2 wins from 7 games and a trip to Valley Parade coming up next, what can Simon Weaver do to help turn their fortunes round, Stuart?
Well, I mean, time will tell. It may be that they had a stroke of luck on deadline day. It may be that they didn't. With Luke Armstrong's transfer to Wrexham falling through, they've suddenly got a lot of firepower there potentially when Josh Marsh gets himself fit. I spoke to Sarah Barry, the chief executive there, earlier in the week, and she says that financially they've been covered for the chairman's put money in to cover the loss of the Armstrong transfer fee. So it doesn't seem like there's any major issues on that front. The concern now is a footballing one, really. How does Armstrong react to the disappointment of moving out, missing out on that transfer, which he clearly wanted? The reports were quite good at the weekend, in terms of, you know, the feedback was that Armstrong put in quite a good performance. There was no sulkiness or anything like that against Gillingham. And again, you know, like we just talked about with regards to Doncaster, sounded like it was a pretty good performance against the team who went top of the table as a result, just undone by a very late goal in stoppage time for Sean Williams. So there's definitely positive things for them to cling to at Harrogate. But yeah, I think a lot will ride on how Armstrong responds between now and the January transfer window, and how quickly Josh Marsh gets fit, and whether the two of them can form a good partnership together, you know, to make the most of what could have been a pretty tricky deadline day for the club with the way things panned out.
Definitely, definitely. And now we turn our attention to League One and Barnsley, who have played out back-to-back 2-0 victories in the league, which has seen them placed just 2 points outside of the playoff places. Their upcoming game is a visit to Burton Albion. How do you see Neil Collins' men sort of lining up for that clash based on the last few performances?
Well, I think in keeping with probably most of the clubs in our county, I think Barnsley will have been glad of the international break, glad of the fortnight on the training ground to just work on things, you know, tying things down a little bit closer. But yeah, they ended that phase of the season very strongly. Three defeats on the trot, if you count the Football League trophy. For obvious reasons, a lot of people don't, but nevertheless, things seem to be moving in the right direction. And again, we talk about Doncaster and their past experiences. Barnsley probably should be looking at this saying, well, it took us a couple of weeks under a new manager at the start of last season to find our feet, but once we did, we really hit our straps, and to convince themselves in this case that history is going to repeat itself. It does feel like things are moving in the right direction for them. It feels quite positive for them as a club. Obviously, losing Liam Kitching when they did was a huge blow, and you know, we're yet to see really how that will pan out. As we discussed last week, the defensive side is sort of the big concern for them. But you know, if Devante Cole can keep up his form, and you know, the team could keep scoring goals, that hopefully can, you know, make light of that and take a bit of pressure on off the team. Burton haven't had the best start to the season by any stretch of the imagination. So to be playing them at home, really, this is an opportunity for Barnsley to just build a bit of momentum to sort of maybe a bit harsh to say paper over some of the cracks, but minimise some of the problems that Kitching's departure will have caused.
Definitely, definitely. And finally, for this week, we turn our attention to England, who had to settle for a draw in what I perceive to be a subpar performance when they faced Ukraine, before recording a far more impressive 3-1 victory in their international friendly against Scotland. That game saw Gareth Southgate make several changes from the side that faced Ukraine, and they seem to have paid off. What did you make of the performances, and how do you think Southgate will look at the game against Italy, which is coming up next month?
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of how he looked at the performances, I think the game in Wrocław was just a bit of a bad day at the office, really. Not even a bad day at the office, just as you said, you know, a bit subpar. They were just a little bit lethargic in their passing and their attacking play. It wasn't terrible by any means, and obviously it was a big emotional day for Ukraine, who had, you know, fantastic backing from the stands, and it was obviously their opportunity to sort of send out a bit of a message, given all the far bigger problems that are happening in that country. But really, you know, the position England went into that game in terms of the qualifying group. They were 100% at that stage. To take a draw like that away from home, no big deal, really. They'd sort of earned themselves that blanket by winning in Italy. I think the Scotland game showed what they're capable of when the passing is that much sharper and crisper, and they need to sort of replicate that now. But yeah, you know, lots of positives for them. Jude Bellingham continues to look like an absolutely outstanding player. You know, Phil Foden was brilliant against Scotland. There's such a wealth of attacking talent. We know that with England. Few issues at the back with obviously John Stones injured at the moment, but sort of more pertinently for the long term, Harry Maguire's lack of football, Calvin Phillips' lack of football, although he played quite well at Hampden. Yeah, I think England are in a good place. I think against Italy again, you know, you'd very much like to win. Italy have got a change of manager at the moment. They're not in the best way, but even just avoiding defeat again from the position England are in the group will be good. And we'll get them, you know, most of the way to Germany, given that there's a couple of teams qualify for that group. The question, as always, with England is, can they step it up when we get to the major tournament? And it's, you know, it's hard to gauge that from games against Scotland, with the greatest of respect to them, and games even against, you know, Italy and the leading nations in qualifying, because tournament football is just another step up. But as I say, I think the Scotland game showed them the way they need to go in terms of that faster passing, and you know, the contrast with Ukraine was quite stark. It's just a question of, can they replicate that under the pressure of playing against, you know, better midfields, better defences, and time will tell on that.
Yeah. We'll have to wait and see how Gareth Southgate goes about with regards to his team selection. Again, because like you said, there's still some issues at the back which he should address. But again, fortunately, the team has shown that it is just a wealth of talent and technical ability. So this shouldn't be much to worry about from the fans' point of view.
Yeah, I mean, it was disappointing that Levi Colwill didn't get any minutes in the two games. I gather he picked up a bit of an injury in training, so that's probably why. But I think England do need players who are going to put pressure on Maguire and Phillips. Because I think everybody's worried about them going into a major tournament, you know, on the back of barely having played in a season. But in Southgate's defence, the reason, or one of the reasons he's sticking with them, one of them is the fact that they've played so well for him in the past. The other one is a lack of alternatives. You know, it's similar with Jordan Henderson, where in his case, it won't be a lack of football. It'll be a question of whether the football's of high enough standards. But it's okay talking about leaving these players out. People need to step forward and show that they can do the job. You know, Lewis Dunk, I thought, was extremely good on the right side of central defence for England on Tuesday. But the right side's not so much the issue. You know, we know a fit John Stones can be relied upon. The question is, can anybody, you know, be a solid partner for him and be the sort of person who can be left one-on-one defending with a centre-forward if Stones goes into midfield, as he was doing so well for Manchester City last season? It just gives England a lot more options if you've got somebody with the pace and with the one-on-one defending skills that you can trust to do that. And again, you know, some people have made the point, quite rightly, that perhaps the reason that Foden and Bellingham were so effective that night had something to do with the extra insurance of Phillips being alongside Declan Rice. But the question is, can Phillips maintain those standards? Frankly, if he's not playing football, and it could be that if this situation continues much longer, both those players have to have serious thoughts in January about whether they need to leave those clubs either permanently or on loan, because That is the big concern for England. But say you look at it on the other side of the field, and people are now saying, well, this shows that Foden has to play. For example, having had such a good game on the right wing, but Bukayo Saka has been absolutely outstanding for England. Harry Kane's obviously a must pick. Bellingham's a must pick. That's three of your front four players. Then, if you play Foden, and I'm not saying you shouldn't, that means you're leaving out Grealish, you're leaving out Rashford, you're leaving out Madison. It feels at the moment as though there's such a wealth of talent up there that there's always going to be complaints about who's left out. And so that side of the equation is a really good place for Southgate to be in.
Yeah, I mean it's obviously the dream headache that England would want to have, really,
Yes.
because they can look at the bench and think, well, if so and so is not performing to the standards we require, we can always turn to so and so. So it's quite nice for them to have that issue, really.
It is, but and that was the frustration really of the Ukraine game, that they brought players off the bench and they weren't able to change it. And I think, I say on the one hand, it's nothing. I say it's nothing to panic about. You have these days, better to have them in qualifying. Hasn't cost them in the group, but it on the other hand, it was a bit of a reminder that this team is still not the finished product. And there is some way to go, but really in terms of the squad depths England have got at the moment, it's outstanding. And worth saying, I should have mentioned earlier, one of the highlights of the Ukraine game, although Kyle Walker scored his first goal in 77 appearances, the big thing for me was the quality of his defensive performance. Up against a player of Mudryk's pace, I know he's not had the best time of it recently, but he was outstanding defensively. And in Walker and Southgate, excuse me, Walker and Stones, that's two players England can absolutely bank on defensively. You'd probably put Luke Shaw in the same bracket when he gets fit. It's just that other position. And when you're looking at making the step from European Championship finalists to European Championship winners, it's just those tiny little details which niggle away at you, I suppose.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening. Look after yourselves, and bye for now.